So as you know, I like to often talk about major themes that are coming up around me during recently, and I just led a meditation retreat. Some of you were on the retreat. And what I noticed during the retreat was a lot of people in their interviews were talking about difficult mind streams or thought streams that were coming up, which all tended to be self-doubt, rooted in self-doubt. And then when I pointed out, well, okay, this is doubt. This is self-doubt. They were all like, really? Because, yeah, and a few other people lately have said things to me, that some worry or difficulty, and I'm like, well, that's self-doubt. And what I realize is that most people don't recognize self-doubt as self-doubt. Most people think that the thoughts that they're thinking that are doubting thoughts are actually true or have some basis in reality, rather than just seeing it as a doubtful or doubting thought. So I deal with self-doubt from time to time. It's not a huge hindrance of mine, but you know, put yourself up here in the leading a spiritual community, and you'll experience some self-doubt. But it's a really difficult mind state and heart state to deal with. And so today, that's what I'm going to talk about: self-doubt, what it is, what the Buddha's take was on doubt, how to recognize self-doubt when it's arising, because we often don't see it, and then, of course, how to work with it. You know, I talk a lot about being uncovering your authentic self. That's my latest passion lately, and getting down to your authentic self. And we each have this innate inner knowing, this deep inner wisdom that can help direct our decisions and direct our lives. Come on in. If we can tap into them, you know, tap into this inner knowing self. But, you know, and I talk a lot about, and I want to clarify once again, is we have, in Buddhist practice, we have different realms that we're dealing with. And when I'm talking about the worldly realm, the realm of form, of thought, of emotion, I'm talking about the relative realm, relative reality. And then in our practice, our mindfulness practice, we start tapping into this other realm, the one this innate wisdom, this peace that's there, that's our natural, authentic essence of who we really are. And that's from the ultimate realm, this authentic beingness. And when we tap into these states of the ultimate realm or ultimate reality, we feel how we're not a separate self, right? There's a self in the relative reality, but in ultimate reality, there's the not self. We feel that interconnection with all life, this loving connection. But when we're back into the relative realm, relative reality, that's just where we can feel doubt, where we experience doubt. And I like to bring it back to reality and face reality that it's not always easy. Can I get a witness? It's not always easy, and it can be rather challenging at times to be a human being. And it can be really scary and confusing at times. We weren't born with an owner's manual. Did you notice that? You ever wish that you were? Where's the owner's manual for this situation? What am I supposed to do? Ashley Brilliant, this catty writer, he has a quote that I really like. He says, "My life has a superb cast, but I can't figure out the plot." And that is so true, because sadly, this innate wisdom, this inner wisdom that I keep talking about, is often overshadowed by difficulties in life, by obscurations to modern day living. And there are so many different things that can obscure our connection with this innate wisdom, this inner being. But I believe that one of our biggest hindrances to tapping into this place is the topic of tonight, self-doubt. If you're plagued with self-doubt, you probably find yourself second-guessing yourself often. Second-guessing your decisions, or judging decisions you already made, or beating yourself up for mistakes that you've made, second-guessing your perceptions, your analyses, your interactions that you just had with someone, or planning an interaction you're going to have with someone, or judging your capabilities and doubting your capabilities. And does any of this sound familiar to anybody? Right? And when you really start shining the mindfulness light on your inner thoughts, like we did during the meditation today, you'll probably notice that there's, and I talk about this a lot, the inner narrator, the inner critic that's there, who's questioning you, judging you, judging other people, situations, pretty much regularly. The inner critic doesn't go to sleep unless, hey, come on in. So I want to make a distinction that this doubting mind, the self-doubt, is different from the beginner's mind or the not-knowing mind. There's a distinction here. So I talked a couple weeks about the not-knowing, the beginner's mind. That mind is inquisitive. It's questioning. It's choosing not to be sure about anything so that it can be open to reality as it is, right? So there's a wise skepticism to that mindset. In fact, the Buddha did motivate people to have wise skepticism. Remember the story of the Kamalas who are confused because so many wise people were coming through the town claiming that they had the answer to true happiness. The Buddha told them to use wise discernment.
I'm sorry.
No, that's the Buddha. To use wise discernment and to look at things. Don't just buy things wholesale, whatever anyone tells you wholesale, to actually think about it. Use some logic. Test it out, see if it's helpful or not. And if it's not helpful, don't employ that strategy in your life. If it's helpful for yourself and others, then follow that path. Right? So this inquiring doubt, this is a coming from a place of wisdom, can be very beneficial. And we want to utilize that in our lives. I have a family member who reads all this fake news and believes amazingly crazy things lately, and I get to hear about all the dead people who are coming and talking to them through other dead people, through other I won't go into it, but anyhow, so I'm like, where's the wise discernment or skepticism here? I don't know, maybe it's true. But doubt has actually evolved as a positive trait to help us change our course of action if we're going down a really difficult or unhelpful path. So doubt can be a good thing in order to steer us away from things that aren't helpful. Sometimes doubt is your conscience telling you that this is not the situation you want to be involved in, or this is not a person that would be in your highest good to be in relationship with. So doubt can be a positive thing, and we want to not say that all doubt is bad, right? Use discernment to see when doubt is helpful and when doubt is actually just not helpful, which is the self-doubt that I'll be talking about. So So in Buddhism, skeptical doubt is called visikicca. So I'll say that three times really fast. Visikicca, anyhow. So it's a hindrance. It's a mental affliction that mars the purity of the mind and creates obstacles along one's path. Right, so it's not a positive thing. And the Buddha told a simile about this kind of doubt. And his simile was that there's a pot of water that's muddy and it's turbid, so it's moving around in like in a wind, and it's in a dark room. So it's in a dark place too. And then a person goes in there and tries to see the reflection in this muddy, troubled water. And they can't see the reflection, obviously. So that's the same as doubt. That's what it does. It muddies our water and troubles the surface so that we can't see things clearly. When one's mind is overpowered by doubt, the Buddha says that they can't properly see their escape from this doubt, which has arisen. And one does not properly understand one's own welfare, nor does one understand the welfare of others. So basically what he's saying is we can't think clearly. We're not connected to this innate wise place when we're overcome by doubt. The Buddha also compared the abandonment, so when we're let go, we're able to let go of the skeptical doubt, to the same as being on a very long, dangerous trip with a lot of terrible hazards along the way. And then suddenly we successfully finally reach our safe space. So when we abandon this doubt, we've reached our safe space. So a lot of people plagued by doubt are so used to this inner critic that's constantly judging them or, you know, narrating, that they don't even recognize it. It's just like part of the backdrop. They're used to it. And they don't see how this doubting mind is such a mind killer. Painful, contracted, difficult this state of mind can be when it's operating. Now, you know, I want to make another distinction too, because everybody experiences self-doubt from time to time. I don't know anyone who hasn't. But I'm talking about, number one, bringing more mindful awareness to the voice of doubt. And number two, if this doubt is debilitating or if it's marring our ability to see things clearly so that we can't make any wise decision, or it's taking the joy out of life, or it's heading us down on the wrong path, how to work with doubt so that these things don't happen. So recognizing doubt, self-doubt when it's happening. I've written down a bunch of signs that you might be overcome by doubt, but I'm curious to hear from all of you to share just very short, brief sentence, three or four words. What are some signs that you might be plagued by self-doubt? What might be happening?
Insomnia.
Insomnia.
Can't make a decision.
Can't make a decision.
Thinking.
Constant thinking.
Depression.
Depression?
Foggy.
Frogging?
Foggy.
Oh, foggy. Yeah, get spaced out. I was like, what's frogging? Yeah. That too. Yes.
Procrastination.
That's a good one too.
Thinking in extremes, like always or never.
Thinking in extremes, always, never, or possibly the worst possible scenarios, catastrophizing.
Paralyzed by indecision.
Right, totally paralyzed. You guys are getting most of my list. How about in your interactions with other people? How might you show up in your conversations? So you might not be interacting much. Yeah, isolating.
Critical mind.
Judging.
Mistrusting.
Great, mistrusting.
Overly influenceable.
Okay, that's a good one. Overly influenceable. Mm. So changing your mind often from one extreme potentially to another. Right? These are inquiries for you to really look at because we're all different too. This shows up for all of us, but we're all different. Your speech pattern might be halting. You might start to speak and then stop or start to say one thought stream and then change your mind and go to a different thought stream because the inner critic might be saying, well, that's stupid. Why are you saying that? Or they don't understand what you're talking about. You need to go back and justify or do the whole story beforehand. Do you know what I'm saying? They're not going to understand you unless you give them all the details. So that could be because the inner critic is saying they won't understand you because, being overly concerned with how other people are perceiving you might be a sign that you're plagued by self-doubt. Anything else?
Shrinking from your greatness.
What's that?
Shrinking from your greatness.
Yes. Shrinking, being small. Perhaps you have a great thing to share. This inner wisdom comes through and says something, and you're like, oh. And someone said, not able to make a decision. Some people get stuck in weighing the pros and the cons for a very long time. Right? That might be motivated by self-doubt. If you have a lot of fear and anxiety about making decisions might be a sign, or fear and anxiety about making major changes or any changes in your life. Starting something new. If you're saddled by a lot of confusion, that might be motivated by self-doubt. So looking at confusion as your mind state. And looking underneath it. If you don't want to take risks, because maybe, why might you not want to take risks?
Failure.
You might fail, right? Yeah, speaking of taking risks, I found another quote. If you, at first, you do not succeed, skydiving is not for you. Don't tell your friend who's skydiving tomorrow. And so, you know, some areas we have a lot of confidence and faith in ourselves, and we don't deal with a lot of self-doubt. But other areas we might be plagued with more self-doubt. So it's also a really important inquiry to look at where your map of self-doubt is, because that's where you want to bring some more energy, some more inquiry, some more mindful awareness, perhaps stepping out and taking some risks in those areas as well, right? Like I said, I don't suffer from doubt very often because I've done a lot of work with self-doubt, have had a lot of self-doubt in my life. But there are a few areas that I still really notice self-doubt. And one is in promoting myself. Like if someone said, hey, what do you do? And why don't you tell me, maybe I'll want to have a mindfulness training in our organization. I'll be like, bleh, bleh. You know, even though I teach this stuff every day, I experience self-doubt in promoting myself. So I've been really working at opening up to this fear of self-promotion. I've got a lot of stuff around. I was married to someone who was a real swarmy promoter. And you know, sometimes I have this fear of failure. And I think some of you who were on the retreat, I told the story. Southern Dharma Retreat Center. I've been going there since the 90s on retreats. A lot of retreats in the 90s, early 2000s. Then I started going to IMS. And then when I started teaching about a decade ago, mindfulness, I had this fantasy, oh, I would love to teach up at Southern Dharma. I wonder if they'll ever want me to teach up at Southern Dharma. So I was hoping that they would invite me to teach at Southern Dharma, right? And then they never asked me to teach. at Southern Dharma. So I pretty much let that fantasy go. And then I started teaching at other retreat centers and had several people come to a lot of the retreats and really like them. And I love teaching retreats. And a couple months ago, I got an invitation to come lead a retreat at Southern Dharma in 2018, right? So part of me was like, yay, I'm teaching up at Southern Dharma. And I was really excited, you know, like, oh, okay, this will be great. What should I teach? And then about 5 minutes later, I started self-doubt hit, and I'm like, oh, no, what if nobody comes to my retreat? What if nobody signs up? Yeah, so I noticed immediately it was doubt. Doubting mind had hit, right? So my joy was cut off very soon as I started doubting myself. So the Buddha listed doubt as one of the five hindrances, along with, does anybody know what some of them are? Yes, greed and anger, which is in the aversion category, craving.
Sloth and torpor.
Sloth and torpor. I know you never experienced that one. None of us do. And then anxiety and restlessness is the other one. But out of these five hindrances, they're considered difficult mind states or preoccupations that hinder one's meditation practices. So if your meditation practice or your mindfulness is not being strong, they're being hindered by one of these five hindrances. And doubt is not only one of them, but it's considered the most difficult and precarious one of them all. And the reason why it is, it's considered, and it's insidious, because number one, you often don't see it. And number two, it can totally derail your meditation practice. As soon as you're sitting there meditating and you think, I can't do this, or I'm just not a good meditator, or I'm just not born to do this, what might happen? You stop, right? Or if you sit there and go, well, I really don't know about this Rānya teacher. I don't think that this Sangha or this group is for me. I don't know about this mindfulness. This is the wrong meditation practice for me, or this is the wrong Buddhist sect for me. As soon as you start, doubt starts getting in there, it really destroys the foundation of your practice and derails, you'll quit and never turn back, usually, if doubt's really strong. So you have to be able to see doubt clearly. So, doubt is simply a mind state, just like joy, just like sadness, just like any other mind state. It's simply a mind state that arises, and then what happens? It passes away, right? So it's not a permanent thing. It's going to arise and pass away. We have to be able to see doubt for doubt as it is when it arises, and know that eventually it'll pass away. If it's a regular visitor, doubt, then you've probably been dealing with it for a very long time. Perhaps you developed this habit of doubting yourself as a child or young adult. But just like any other bad habit or difficult habit, it can be broken and it can be reduced or eliminated over time. I think it's really important to recognize your top 10 doubting tunes. You know, maybe you don't have 10, but at least recognize them. See, oh yeah, this is the I can't dance tune or song. So if you're really, really, really suffering by chronic anxiety around self-doubt, that you might want to seek a mental health professional, because I think it can ruin your life. It's very debilitating. So following suggestions to work skillfully with self-doubt when it arises, number one, we have to recognize it, right? Oh, this is self-doubt. I think one of the most important things to do is to remind ourselves that we're not alone, that that everyone has struggled with self-doubt from time to time, right? Practice mindfulness meditation, train daily to being aware of your what's arising and passing away, opening your heart to what's arising and passing away. It makes it much easier to recognize, see the doubt, and be able to deal with it when it's here if you're practicing. Bring your mindfulness practice to your thoughts. Become really curious about the inner critic. Really, bring your mindful awareness to the inner critic. Say, okay, what's going on here, little inner critic? You might want to make friends with the inner critic, right? Invite the inner critic in. Say, oh, doubt or inner critic, I see you. Come on in. What's troubling you today? Really, allow it to be there. Feel what it has to feel. You might want to label your top 10 tune. Sometimes you can just label doubt as doubt. Oh, hello, self-doubt. And then go back to whatever you're doing, it'll go away. And then you can say, yay, it went away. But sometimes it doesn't happen. So if it doesn't happen, if it doesn't go away just by noticing and labeling, what do you want to do then?
Investigate.
Right? If you can, investigate it. So investigating, the first thing you want to do when you're investigating is do not believe the story. Don't believe the storyline. Right? Sometimes this doubt originated in some really tragic or difficult or scary event from childhood. Perhaps we got up to give a report or something and we went blank or we were teased or something bad happened to us, a traumatic event. And so it could set up a little bit of PTSD with some severe doubt, self-doubt. So I think in that case, it's really important to bring a lot of loving kindness and caring and compassion and patience to ourselves when that kind of debilitating doubt really hits. That's when we want to cradle the doubt and hold it and let it know everything's going to be okay. You know, I'm here with you, everything's going to be okay. Kind of like we did loving kindness with our little five-year-old. You can hold your little self, the traumatized self, say it's going to be okay. Know that this doubt's going to pass away. That's really important. That helps you not cling to it, not push it away, not be really angry at it. Because we're just energizing when we're trying to push it away. We're getting angry at it. We're cursing it. We're actually energizing the doubt, right? So we don't want a conflictual relationship with the doubt. We want a loving, accepting, recognizing relationship with it. Once you see the doubt clearly, it breaks up the solidity of the doubt. It can't have control over you unless you don't see it. I think another thing that really helps is to think of times where you have been successful. Because oftentimes he's doubting the critic is irrational and it's trying to convince you that you won't be capable or can't do something when you have plenty of evidence in your life that you actually can in different arenas in your life. So remind yourself in all the other ways that you faced your fear, you've done it anyway. That can be very helpful too. And let the doubt be there until it dissipates, because it will dissipate. And once again, do your best not to believe the inner critic, what it's saying and all the demands. The other thing too is I say this a lot, but it bears repeating, and that is our society is this fast-paced, driven, it has unrealistic demands of all of us. Just almost like crazy, unrealistic demands. We're prone to comparing ourselves to others. Do you know what I'm talking about? And we come up short. We're always going to come up short as long as we're comparing ourselves to everyone else. And we kind of have set up to be perfectionists. You know, we have to feel like we have to be perfect or else we shouldn't even do whatever it is we're going to do. So I think it's really important to let go of perfectionism, embrace your imperfectionism, and you know, my dad used to say, whatever you do number one. You have to be number one in everything you do. And I heard him saying something similar just recently, and I said, you know, Dad, that's bullshit. I don't want to hear that anymore. Do you realize how much pain and suffering that caused me? So I'm just letting you know, you don't have to be number one in everything you do. Let that go. Be whatever you're going to be. Be all you can be. Yeah. So the other important thing to know is that your doubting mind, this is some part of your psyche that you created at some point in your life in order to protect you. Right? It's your friend. It's there to protect you. It's not the enemy. So when self-doubt comes in to protect you, see it as your friend. Treat it as your friend. It's on your side, even though it's causing you stress. Sometimes it's really pointing out to something that's unhealthy that you want to change. So befriend your doubt. Bring curiosity to your doubt. Bring caring and kindness to it, to the doubting mind. And it'll start to lessen over time. It'll become, you know, bring it onto your team, onto your side, and help calm down, heal it by giving it the attention that it needs. And of course, if you're not taking certain risks that you really want to take, kind of bucket list risks, then I say go for it. As long as it's maybe not jumping out of planes, I don't know. Or maybe go ahead. So when we bring mindful awareness to whatever's arising strongly within us, through this process of connecting with mindful awareness, we are able to tap into and connect to this inner wisdom. Just through being fully present with whatever's arising, the inner wisdom comes through with the, along with the mindfulness, right? So when self-doubt is there and we bring mindful awareness to it, we bring caring attention to it, we're actually opening the door for this inner wisdom. So through the process of the self-doubt, we can open to wisdom and let wisdom make our decisions for us and not be stuck in confusion. So, anyhow, from this place, this inner wisdom, this lets our authentic self shine through, our wise self, the part of us that has a sense of humor, that has a love for life and the wisdom to know what direction to take. I'm going to read Wendell Berry. I go among trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet around me like circles on water. My tasks lie in their places where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then what is afraid of me comes and lives a while in my sight. What it fears in me leaves me, and the fear of me leaves it. It sings and I hear its song. Then what I am afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings, and I hear its song. After days of labor, mute in my consternations, I hear my song at last, and I sing it. As we sing, the day turns, the trees move. So thank you for your presence, your practice, and for your listening.